Cosmic Shed.
Hello and welcome to the Cosmic Shed. I'm Andrew, and with me today are
Maddie
and
Steve.
And today's episode is all about BBC astronauts. Do you have what it takes?
It's fantastic, and I'm pretty sure everyone that watched it is like, oh my god, I want to do it too. Ah!
If you haven't seen it, basically it's a reality TV programme,
but not like that.
No.
It's not really following their sort of day-to-day lives and all the silly drama, as most reality TV shows do. It's kind of like set tasks that they have to perform, and at any point they can be asked to go home. A lot of them tend to have kind of science or military backgrounds.
Yeah, I think they must have sent out to all the universities on that notice board. Did you not get notifications?
I think I saw something.
I wish I paid more attention, quite frankly.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely.
So it's kind of like The Apprentice for astronauts, where Alan Sugar is played by a wonderful man.
Commander Chris Hadfield.
Oh, yes.
Kevin Fong and Aya Whiteley. Who are like the judges, I guess, but they also give them encouragement. But it's like, it is a reality TV show, but it's not rubbish. That's the key thing here, isn't it? It's not like it doesn't feel like it's all set up to be a television programme. It feels like it's set up to do a bit of science communication, to actually show you what it is to be an astronaut and to possibly choose somebody to be an astronaut.
Yeah, it feels very genuine. Like, none of it seems to be staged. And the kind of variety of different tasks that they're put to do, just kind of like, okay, awesome.
I feel very, very jealous watching it. Tim Gregory is one of the contestants in it. And as you may know, I do a radio show. And fairly often, Steve and Maddie do the radio show too on BCFM here in Bristol.
Called Scraping the Barrel.
Yeah, yeah. And there's no one else. Yeah. Bring in the cavalry.
It's called Love and Science, and I do it with a very lovely man, a friend of mine called Malcolm Love, hence the Love. And Tim Gregory came to the studio on Monday, and we did an interview with him. So here is Malcolm Love and me talking to Tim Gregory of Astronauts, Do You Have What It Takes?
One of the reasons that I wanted to be involved with the programme initially was to get science out there and talk to people about it.
So you're a science communication enthusiast.
Oh, I love it. It's just, it makes it all worth it.
Well, that suits us very well.
Yeah. That
is one of the best things about this programme. If people haven't watched it, please get on iPlayer and watch it tonight. It is a wonderful TV programme. It's reality TV, but with a brain. You know, no offence to people who like reality TV ordinarily, but this, you watch it and you're learning something at the same time, and there's some really brilliant, I mean, what you're going through is effectively what astronauts will go through.
Absolutely, in most cases it is the actual tests that they put astronauts through when they're selecting them for real.
But you've got, watching you while you're doing these tests, you've got Commander Chris Hadfield, and Kevin Fong, and surely the astronauts don't have that extra pressure on them, do they? I mean, I watched you the other day. I was incredibly jealous. My wife will testify to this. I was quite cross on the sofa that I wasn't you at that particular moment.
He's always cross. He's always cross that he's not in space.
Oh, aren't we all?
And you were doing, what was the Soyuz?
The Soyuz docking.
But you're doing something, right? Talk me through it, but to start with, you're doing the Soyuz thing with Chris Hadfield sitting right next to you. Does that not add to the pressure?
That was an incredible experience. I mean, the software that we used to simulate the Soyuz docking was the actual software that astronauts use to train how to dock the Soyuz in real life. And they also have a copy of that software on board the International Space Station that they use to practice with in orbit. Because if you're up there for a year, you know, you're gonna lose that fine control that you need over the Soyuz to properly dock it and when you return to Earth. So to get to actually use that in real life was just so cool. And especially having a real life astronaut sat next to you. It almost felt like I was in the Soyuz for real. Yeah, a couple of times during that test, you really forget that you're in the middle of a training facility. You really felt like you're there.
I hope you don't mind me saying, but you nailed that as well.
Thank you. Didn't do too bad on that one.
Yeah.
But look, let's take a step back.
Sorry,
no, that's right. let's just take a step back because we just need to explain. It is, as you say, it's reality television. All four episodes that have been broadcast so far are available on the BBC iPlayer, and so as Andrew says, do take a look at them. But let's explain the setup for anybody who hasn't seen it so far. So we've mentioned Commander Chris Hadfield, who was an astronaut and a commander of the ISS.
Yes.
Just to make it clear, it's not the commander of ISIS, the commander of ISS, just in case there's any confusion and hate mail coming in. It's not that. An extraordinary man, and two other people, Aya Whiteley and Dr. Aya Whiteley, who's a psychologist. She's the director for space medicine at UCL, says on my information here. And Kevin Fong, who we know, who's an anaesthetist and a trauma specialist.
Yeah.
And quite a regular on sciencey things on British television.
Yeah, and he's also an expert in extreme environment physiology. Yeah. So between the three of them, between Chris, Kevin and Ia, they kind of had all the major bases covered for what...
They are examiners.
Yes, they were judging us through all these tests that they were putting us through and judging our performance and our strengths and our weaknesses.
Yeah.
And then as the weeks go on, they could send people home.
Yeah.
So that it could happen at any time. We didn't know when it was going to happen.
And what it seems to me is they tend to kick out two people a week. Is that right?
On average, yeah. Oh, although in last night's...
It's not fixed.
It's not fixed. In last night's episode, it was only one person who got sent home.
And what's that like? So someone's been sent home and they come in, they say goodbye to the rest of you. They must be really crushed, really disappointed. Are you all supportive of each other? Or are you going, yes, it's not me?
It was a very strange environment to be in because from day one, the 12 of us, we bonded straight away because we're all there for the same reason. We've all got that shared passion and interest in space exploration and we all want to be astronauts. Although we all come from different walks of life, we all want that same goal. And I think part of being an astronaut is being supportive of your teammates. And it's very difficult to not be supportive of people, even when you know that on paper you're in direct competition with these people. And if someone does badly, you know that maybe, I don't know, you should be thinking, yes, thank goodness, that's going to make me look a bit better. But it wasn't like that at all. From day one, we were all incredibly supportive and encouraging of each other. If someone didn't do well, the support was there. And if someone did well, it was congratulations all around. It was a really good environment. So whenever anyone got sent home, it was difficult for them as well as the people who were left.
I was wondering, from the people who've gone so far, I don't want any spoilers.
No spoilers.
People who've gone so far, is there anyone... When they said they were going, you were really shocked. Could you kind of understand the decisions?
I think when Hannah left, she was the third person to leave. She left in episode two. When Hannah left, that was a big shock to me because I was very close to Hannah. She was a great mentor. I think that's probably because of the amount of mountaineering that she's done. She's been a mentor to people on the mountains for many, many years. And she really took me under her wing.
She's like an extreme environment enthusiast.
Oh, yeah. She's been up Everest twice. Yeah. I mean, first time she was 100 metres off the summit, but that counts in my book. She was something else. She has so many good stories to tell and so many lessons that she's learned along her travels and her expeditions. And I really, really made very good friends with Hannah right from the word off. So when she left, it was tough. I thought, wow, if she's gone, this is getting serious now. And also when Prash left, when the first person left, up to that point, it had all been, wow, look where we are, we're at space camp. But when Prash left, it was a very stark reminder that actually there's only going to be one person left at the end of this.
And of course, it's striking as well because these people are so accomplished, as we sort of indicated with Hannah. Prash is a surgeon.
Yes.
He's a really smart guy.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And very, very committed to the process. Hannah, as you say, was involved with sort of extreme environments and is very experienced in that. But she really was very affected by this sort of claustrophobia, wasn't she?
Yes. Yes, she was. She'd been caught in avalanches before and had known people that had been caught in avalanches. So she had a bit of a fear of claustrophobia, which, if you're going into space, is unfortunate. But, you know, she's the kind of person that if she's got a fear, she's going to get out there and try and tackle it head on. She's not the kind of person who would shy away from that, which is why she was there and why she gave it a go as well.
And I noticed in the programme, one of the things they said was that she had a tendency toward drama. Now, I'm not, this is not me criticising her to bring this up, because I, as my mum would say, I couldn't light a candle to her abilities. So, you know, I'm saying this humbly. But I thought that was very interesting, that for certain issues, psychologically, it seemed she tended to catastrophize things, you know, dramatize things. And clearly, that's something you need to be ice cool, don't you, if you're up in the space capsule.
Hannah was a very passionate person about many different things. And I think if I'd been caught in an avalanche before and been minutes away from suffocation, I think I would probably have reacted way worse than she did during the underwater submersion test. I think she did very well, considering that she'd had that experience.
It's also, as you say, it's a very different thing to be an astronaut than it is to be a person in real life. You know, and the astronaut drama level is much lower. It has to necessarily be much lower. So you're not judging her as a person, you're judging her as an astronaut.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And that's a really fine distinction to make, because every single person of the 12 of us was so accomplished in their own ways and all had their own traits and personalities, but this was a competition to see if you had to become an astronaut. And, you know, Hannah's a prime example of an absolutely amazing, fantastic, accomplished person who Chris, Ian and Kevin thought didn't have what it took to be an astronaut. But that's fine. She's still amazing.
She'll be all right. Yeah. It's one of the things that I love about the programme, actually, is that they seem to have chosen people because they could genuinely win it. Everybody seemed to be.
Yeah.
They've not chosen people just to make a television programme better, if you see.
Yeah,
because they were good.
All the wild cards.
Yes, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
the crazy person who's never going to get through, thing. You know, yeah. Who's too eccentric or whatever. It's none of that. Me before. What was it like when you heard that you were going to be one of the candidates?
Oh, I was in the lab at the time, and they called me, and so I ran out of the lab and answered my phone. And when they told me, I think I probably screamed the corridor down, because I was just so excited. I couldn't believe it, because it had already been months in the pipeline, this application, to make it through to the final 12. And when I found out, I just thought, this is it.
You're listening to Love and Science on BCFM Radio.
So, Tim, it's fabulous to have you with us. And we've been talking about the programme and the experiences. I have to say, you are extraordinarily and relentlessly positive and happy in the show. I take it that's just you. It's not you've become delirious with joy because of the show. This is your personality, isn't it?
Every single minute that I spent during that process was just a dream come true. It was the closest that I've ever got to getting to see what it's like for real life, applying to be an astronaut. And every morning I woke up and I thought, I'm going to try my best today, but above all, I'm going to enjoy this, because I'm probably never going to get this far again.
Yeah.
And I really did. I enjoyed every second. It was fantastic.
So it's reality TV with, as Andrew says, it's smart reality. What happened? What actually happens at the end? Obviously, I'm not asking you about details of what of people, individuals, but what happens at the end of the show to the person who's selected?
So of the final 12, there's one person left standing at the end, and that person, they get a personal recommendation from Chris Hadfield the next time the European Space Agency send out a call for new astronauts. And that's going to go a long way, because although Chris is a retired astronaut, he's still very much involved with space agencies worldwide. He's involved in astronaut selection and mission control still.
Yeah.
So
it's not something you can fudge on the CV, is it? Because people can look at it and go, yeah, they did do
that. Yeah, that looked pretty good on your CV. probably for any job.
The number one person gets recommended by Chris Hadfield, but the rest of you are going to go for it as well, aren't you?
Yeah, probably. I guess. Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
But even just being part of the programme, for me, it just gave me so many different skills that I never really thought about, and it gave me a chance to develop and explore different facets of my personality. So it's just been a useful thing in and of itself.
Yeah, I think one of the things that they criticised you for so far is how you behaved on the evening when you had you could bring a loved one.
Oh yeah,
I have to say I didn't criticise you for that. I thought it was wonderful, the way you bounded across the room to your mum.
Yeah. So I hadn't seen my mum for months, up until that evening, and then there we met, like in the presence of Chris Hadfield and all these amazing people.
She was awestruck, wasn't
she? Yeah, she was. And she was very much a part of it from day one. She was one of the first people that knew that I'd applied for this, and she was there the whole way.
That's fantastic.
So the fact that my mum got to be involved with it, with this amazing thing that I was going through, was just, it was such a good evening. I'm so glad that she got to be there, because she is the biggest reason why I was there in that process. She's been so supportive my whole life, and I'm really glad that she got to be part of it. It was very cool.
How much do you think, we're just going back to the activities that we've seen so far, is there any sense in which people got lucky on the day? I'm thinking, for example, of the test where you had to do the docking, which we mentioned earlier in the programme. Do you think that, because there was one guy there, I'm afraid I can't remember his name, but it just went completely haywire.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, was it Merritt, who got kicked out because she just couldn't get close. Do you think there's an element of luck with some of those tests?
I think there's probably luck involved with everything to a certain degree. But the tests were largely based on skill and innate ability to do something and learn something fast. So, for example, James A., who did really well on the Soyuz, he docked it with like 4 minutes to spare, which was incredible.
Yeah.
He's an avid video gamer, which undoubtedly played a big part in his ability to control that craft. And his 3D thinking skills as well.
Yeah.
And I think my ability as well to think and visualise things in 3D, because I did an undergraduate degree in geology, visualising rocks underground in 3D, probably helped with that as well. And I played a couple of video games when I was younger. A misspent childhood, as Kevin put it.
that is fascinating. Having these extra curricular things which become, you know, you can draw on.
It's amazing what skills and what experiences you draw on in those kinds of situations. Yeah. And I find that with my PhD as well, like hobbies that I've had since I was 13 that I never thought would come in handy turn out to be really useful.
Yeah.
Like when you're imaging meteorites, for example, I've been interested in photography for many, many years now, and just knowing what an aperture is and how that feeds into what an image looks like, it's really useful. So all these skills that you just get through your life, it's amazing where they crop up.
Yeah. I've got a tremendous skill for slouching on the sofa.
Yeah.
So I wonder how that's gonna help.
You do need to sit back when you're on takeoff.
Oh, there
absolutely.
You are. Yeah,
there you see. Might help you out in a centrifuge.
That would come in really handy. Andrew.
The Mars rover thing was amazing.
Mm. Oh, that was so cool.
Let's explain what it is then. What did you have to do?
So the Mars rover, this was in the Mars yard at Airbus in Stevenage, where they have a prototype of the Mars rover that they actually use to do manoeuvres before they do them for real on Mars, because they don't want to crash it or get it stuck anywhere. And the test was, we had to go into a Martian cave and explore it to find symbols on rocks using the UV torch on this rover. And we controlled it with all the controls that they use on the real Mars rover, with the camera and the lights, and it moved very slow as well, 4 centimetres per second, and there was also a delay in the controls, so it was very much a kind of real-life thing. And that was a very difficult test, but one of the coolest, I think, because it was the actual Mars rover that they used to do these prototype manoeuvres, and Tim Peake has also controlled that very same rover, which is pretty awesome.
Or as he used to be known, the astronaut Tim.
Yes.
Yes. There's a few more.
I thought Dr. Ia Whiteley, who seems incredibly smart, was as scary as anything.
Oh, she
terrified me.
On day one, when Chris, Kevin and Ia stepped out of the helicopter, that was the first time we met, and what an entrance. Ia, she has this presence about her, this very impressive demeanour about her. And the first time that I'd ever spoken to her was in the interview test in episode one, where she was figuring out how our minds worked. And that was so intimidating, for lack of a better word. Yeah. But actually, Ia is one of the most lovely people I've ever met.
Yes.
She's just so sweet and so lovely.
Yes. But her image is terrifying.
Absolutely.
It's partly because she didn't say too much, did she?
She didn't say too much. She was always in the background with her notebook, taking notes.
Yeah, yeah.
When she was in astronaut selecting mode, she was a bit intimidating.
Yeah. what was was it like in the centrifuge? Because I have to admit, you know, I'm dodgems in the at the fairground were enough for me. Going in the centrifuge, what a nightmare.
Oh no, it was amazing. It was so fun. This centrifuge is one of the only centrifuges in the world where the actual seating area on the end of the arm can rotate. So the G-force that you feel, you don't feel it side to side and you don't feel it pushing back on your chest. The only direction that you feel the pull is downwards. Right. So it was just like being incredibly, incredibly heavy. Four and a half times my weight.
Yeah.
And you could barely lift your arms when you were at 4.5G and you could feel your face going. And because I'm quite tall, it was a struggle to stay conscious. You would very quickly go unconscious in that environment if you weren't making a conscious effort not to. So I had to tense all the muscles in my legs and my abdomen and my lower body. And while I was in there, I thought, I'm going to make the most of this and experiment a little bit. So I experimented with relaxing the muscles in my lower body. And immediately I could feel my vision becoming tunneled. Everything went kind of black and white. The colour drained from what I could see. And everything started going a bit fuzzy and you felt yourself losing consciousness within seconds. But then you tensed up those leg muscles again and that abdomen muscle. And your consciousness comes back again straight away. It was quite an amazing experience.
Did you learn any tricks to cope with, for example, being incredibly uncomfortable or, you know, almost thinking you're going to lose consciousness, but having to concentrate on a task? You know, did you say, right, I've now permanently learned a way to cope with some of these things?
Well, before the centrifuge test, we had a 5-10 minute lecture from one of the experts who worked at the airbase facility, who talked us through what our flight path was going to be and different symptoms that we might notice, different sensations that we might have. So that was really useful, actually, because I certainly would have passed out because I've never been under high G-force, apart from teacups all and towers once.
Yeah.
And that were enough.
The other thing in this interview, didn't they have screens in front of you showing?
Oh, they did, yeah. They had these screens and it was panoramic. So it was from the whole view was covered by this screen and it was a simulation of what it would be like if you were actually sat in the cockpit of a rocket going up. And they even had the details down to the atmosphere thinning out as you were going up into altitude. And, oh, it was incredible. And because you didn't know you were spinning, there were no windows and all the G-force was downwards. It was in the Z-axis, as they called it. You really forgot that you were in a centrifuge in Sweden and you really did feel like you were there in real life and your stomach were going and your heart was racing. Such an experience.
If you were going to design a mission, with your knowledge of astronauts and indeed of studying space rocks, to go to Enceladus, what would you do?
I would love a sample return mission to Enceladus, because the beautiful thing about Enceladus is that it's got ice volcanoes on its surface. And because it's tiny, it doesn't have much gravity. So the ice crystals that get blasted out of the surface of Enceladus, they go into orbit around Saturn. And these ice crystals have actually made one of the rings of Saturn. It's called the E-ring. So there's all this material in orbit around Saturn in a ring that is just there for us to scoop up and bring back to Earth. It is well within our capability now, and it wouldn't be that expensive to have a sample return mission where we could bring back pieces that originated inside the moon Enceladus, and we could bring it back to Earth, and we can see if there's life in there.
Amazing.
It's giving me shivers.
Yeah.
Now, look, it's entirely realistic for you, if you were the winner of this program or not, and we don't know that yet. That's not something we're talking about. We can talk about that. You could well be an astronaut out there in space. Would you go to Mars? That's an actual realistic thing for you. Would you do it?
I would go to Mars if the objective was to set up a permanent colony there with the intention of living there. Not just going there, living on a few months of whatever you've taken with you and then dying. I would go there if it was a long-term mission, certainly.
Yeah. Well, there can't be many people who would take the option, would there, of going and dying? I mean, going out in a blaze of glory.
Oh, I don't know. They opened it up, this one-way mission to Mars, and the queue was enormous. So many people applied. I think there's something about the human spirit of going to these places that no one's ever been to before to see what's there, and we've still got that now because, you know, inside our heads and genetically we're identical to what we were 100,000 years ago pretty much, and that primal instinct of wanting to go to these places is still around. And I guess that's what mainly drives space exploration.
What do you say to people who say, hey, you could spend the money on something better, you know, on medicine.
Yeah.
Feeding the world. What do you say to that?
The way that funding works, for example, when I buy a new meteorite to analyse as part of my PhD, it's not like that money could be spent on malaria drugs for somebody in Africa, because if it was, obviously, I would rather buy the malaria drugs. That's not how the funding works. But space exploration benefits everybody, not just because of the spin-offs, but because it's a journey. It's a journey that humans have always been on, exploring new places, and we're still continuing that now. And actually, in comparison to a lot of things, space exploration is not that expensive. When you look at the cost of war, for example, space exploration is a fraction of a percent. So I wish people would direct their displeasure with funding structures towards people who fund war rather than space missions.
Did you have room, Tim, to make good friends on the show?
Oh, absolutely. Like I said earlier, we were all there for the same reason. We all have that shared interest and passion in space exploration, and we all have that shared goal of wanting to be an astronaut, many of us, for many, many years. So I remain good friends with all 11 people.
Good. You know, you might be having space parties in the future.
Absolutely. We've already had a couple. They're out of this world.
I've got to be careful what I say. I should stress, I actually don't know what happens in the end. But say for people who've left the programme, there was no indication from anybody that was it. They were kind of giving up.
Oh, absolutely not. Just by the fact that we're all there, we're all very, very determined people. And one of the best things about taking part in this programme is that for all of us, we all have our pitfalls highlighted and things that we can work towards, because becoming an astronaut is not like a place that you can reach unless you actually get there. It's a very, very long journey, and there are lots and lots of things that you can do in life that can lead you to that point to actually become an astronaut for real. And it's worth saying that you could be the perfect candidate to be an astronaut and you're still probably never going to get to be one. But just by trying, the skills that you'll learn along the way and the experiences that you'll have will make for a very, very good life. So it's a kind of win-win situation, wanting to be an astronaut and taking it seriously.
In fact, it's a slightly more mundane side of it, is actually being a part of a reality TV show. You don't strike me as somebody who cares that much about people seeing you, your private moments, you know, seeing you react, seeing you be emotional, excited, and so on. Have you had to learn how to do that, or are you just relaxed about it?
I'm very comfortable with who I am. We're all human. I was never really fazed. One of the things that I said to myself when I went into this process was, Tim, be yourself. It sounds really corny, but don't put a front on for the cameras. Don't try and pretend to be anybody that you're not. And I can honestly say that through the whole thing, I was true to myself. So I'm really pleased about that.
This was part of the show. Operating on yourself. I know you had to do tests on yourself, but, you know, could you pull a tooth out,
do you reckon? I hadn't thought about that one.
You know, that might happen, mightn't it?
Well, Hannah was a dentist in her spare time, so if she was up there with me, I'd let her take my tooth out before I tried it myself. I trust her with my life, so I trust her taking a molar out or two.
But all this... all this surgery stuff, you know, it's a skill that you've got to learn, isn't it? Not the sort of thing that you think about. Well, look, just to say again, the show Astronauts, Do You Have What It Takes? Is on BBC Two. It's on the iPlayer. You can see it on Sunday nights, but you can get all four episodes so far on the BBC iPlayer. You find out what happens to Tim Gregory and the rest of his colleagues. From Andrew and me and Tim, thank you for being with us. Have yourselves a very good evening, and don't forget to join us again next week.
Thanks, Malcolm. I hope you enjoyed that. Tim is a wonderful person, exactly as he appears on the televisions. Such a lovely man. We're going to get him back in the shed. We're going to come and get him in the shed, and we're going to do something about space. Now, I have to apologise because I keep saying at the end of each episode we're going to do Westworld. And we're not, are we? Not yet, anymore.
We are. We're planning it. Because we should probably stop promising it. We have a plan, and we're going to stick to that plan. So there is a Westworld one coming.
Mm-hmm. The plan covers other things as well, and they're all going to be wonderful.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Some highlights?
Electric Dreams.
Yeah, that's starting this Sunday, I think, on Channel 4.
Yes.
Ready, Player
Once
One.
Maddie gets a book in the right language.
Yeah. Is he right for finding cheap second-hand books?
Yeah.
Hey, I'm a student. I'm trying to be thrifty.
Fair play. I highly recommend the audiobook read by Will Wheaton.
Yes, absolutely. Brilliant. Ready, Player One, film coming out next year. We're going to do the book, then the film, as we did with The Martian and Andy Weir, new book, Artemis. It would be just rude if we didn't get Andy Weir back for the shed, wouldn't it?
We definitely should. He is a steely eyed listener.
This is the new Cosmic Shed. It's all waterproof. And, yeah, enjoy the sound of the rain. Thank you so much to Malcolm Love and Tim Gregory for the interview on Love and Science. If you want to hear more from Love and Science, obviously we'll post a link on the Cosmic Shed website, thecosmicshed.com. And thank you to Steve and Maddie for joining me here in the Cosmic Shed.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Andrew.
And thank you very much for listening.
And go watch Astronauts.
The Cosmic Shed.
Science fact.
Science fiction.
And everything in between.